comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I am delighted to be here. I think you will be delighted to be here as well. We are here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Let me remind you quickly, if you're not getting the K-Files, you need to. Now, some of you have subscribed to the K-Files, and then you activated your subscription. However, what you have is a thing on your email account that says somebody's got to click something in order for you to receive the email. Well, this is an automated system that sends out thousands of K-Files. It can't click your link. So you need to go ahead and authorize that to receive the K-Files, and then you will. But if you're not subscribed, click right where it says K-Files on my website, kevinsmithshow.com. All one word, kevinsmithshow.com. Right in the middle of your screen, it says K-Files. And if you'll click that, you will discover something really wonderful. It asks you one question, and one question only, and that question is your email address. So if you supply your email address, you'll get that confirmation email. And once you have that confirmation email, just use the link that's in it and activate your subscription. All right. If you're not a member, you need to be a member. We have another seminar that will be coming up pretty soon, and I'm taking suggestions in our forums for what that seminar should be about. And so we'll make a decision on that and prepare that seminar. It will be coming up pretty soon, and there's no charge, no extra charge for those of you who are members. If you're not a member, fix that. It's that simple. Just fix it. And it's only 25 cents a day, $7.50 a month is what that comes out to. It's even less expensive if you pay quarterly or annually. So if you're not a member, fix it. You can do it tonight. Well, the Alchemy event's coming up this weekend, isn't it? Out in Los Angeles, and I am really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to being out there at the Alchemy event in Los Angeles, and I'm looking forward to meeting in person many of the people that I have interviewed on this show. Many of those speakers, most of those speakers, have been guests on this show and over the years, and I've met them on the telephone and in email, but not in person. Well, I'll get a chance to meet them in person, but more importantly, I'll get a chance to meet you in person. So I'm hoping you'll be there and just come right up to me and introduce yourself. I want your autograph, and I want to get my picture taken with you. So, you know, for me, and, you know, if you want to get a picture taken, you know, with me, that's your choice. And, you know, I have no idea why you would want that. But if you want it, you can do that. I want a picture with you. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we will return in just a moment. All right. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And tonight, things are a little different here. Now, for those of you on the on our radio streams, it doesn't sound different to you. Everything is just as it has been. And that's the way we want it. For those of you who are watching on our TV channel, things are different. And let me explain. Last night during the show, all of a sudden, our the computer that does our TV stream just froze up. So I had to, during the commercial, reboot. And then it made it a few more minutes and froze up again. During the break, I had to reboot. Then it froze up again, and that was pretty much it for the show. So the deal is that computer is at the moment out of service. It'll boot up. It just has some problems. And so what we're doing is the TV stream is being broadcast by my trusty laptop, which is really, really huffing and puffing trying to do this, but it's doing it. But it means that we don't have all of the normal graphics that we normally use, and some of the files that we normally play during breaks, we don't have those. And that we don't have access to them at the moment. So it looks a little bit different, but it will sound as stunning as usual. All right, tonight. Also, because of that, I didn't know whether we were going to be broadcasting live or doing a rebroadcast tonight, because I had no idea. I've never used this laptop for live TV streaming. And I didn't know if it was going to be able to make the trip or not, but it is. But I moved our guest to another night, and because I really kind of expected we would have to be doing a rebroadcast tonight. But things worked out, and we're not having to do the rebroadcast. And as it happens, there's something really, really interesting taking place in space, and it's related to Mars. And I want to talk about that tonight, and then a little bit later on we'll open up the telephone lines and we can talk about that or whatever else you would like to talk about. Some of you have read my book called Mars Maximum Mystery. Now, at the time when that book was published, that information was accurate in that it said there have been more missions to Venus than there have been to Mars. When you add all of the missions together, there have been, that's by us, the European Space Agency, Russia, anybody that's flying in space, you add all the missions together, there have been more missions to Venus than to Mars. That was true when that book was published. At this point, I think they are either tied or Mars has one, maybe two more than Venus. And there's one up there right now. Really interesting about this one. It is called the Phobos Grunt, G-R-U-N-T. And I'm sure that stands for something important. I didn't look that up. But the Russian Phobos Grunt mission is a mission to fly over to Mars and to get into Mars orbit. And then a couple of things will happen. We'll talk about them in a little bit more detail in a moment, but one thing that will happen if this mission is successful is it will deploy a Chinese satellite, and it's a small satellite. This satellite, once it opens up its solar panels like wings, it'll have a wingspan of about 21 feet. approximately. So it's not a huge satellite. And it's riding piggyback on the Phobos Grunt satellite and rockets. I'll show you pictures of it in a moment for those on our TV channel, but that's one thing. And it would deploy this satellite in Mars orbit. This satellite will just be circling Mars, orbiting Mars, taking all kinds of photographs, and gathering other data, scientific data, and be in constant communication with its controllers back here on Earth in China. The main portion of the Phobos Grunt mission is to land on Phobos, which is, of course, a moon of Mars. And it has some things it's going to do, pretty spectacular things in one regard, and in at least one other regard, you sort of scratch your head and wonder why. But we'll talk about those too. So it was launched on Tuesday, and shortly after it was launched, it successfully entered low Earth orbit. And about 2 hours and 15 minutes, something like that, later, it was supposed to fire its main thrusters and head out toward Mars. Well, it didn't, and in fact, it stopped sending telemetry. It simply shut down and quit sending telemetry. Now, for a while, they said it's lost. They didn't know where it was. When it shut down and quit sending telemetry, they had no idea how to find it. Well, that's not true. They knew what to do to try and find it, but at that moment, they couldn't find it. And they spent most of Wednesday looking for this Mars Phobos Grunt spaceship. Now they're saying that they have found it, they've located it, but it's still dead. Now they've got about 36 hours in which to get the commands set up to wake this thing up, if in fact it can be awakened, and to get it to respond. Because after that, its batteries that will be used to fire the thrusters, or the main engine that's going to send it on to Mars, those batteries will be dead after 36 hours, and it will just be mission over at that point. So right now, the Russian Space Agency is scrambling. They're doing everything they can to try and reestablish contact with this Mars satellite, with this spaceship. It was supposed to arrive in Mars orbit October 2012. And it was supposed to then land on Phobos February 2013. So just a few months later, it would land on Phobos. Now, one of the things that it would be doing on Phobos is to scrape up some soil and some rocks, put them in a canister, and then it has a return module on the top of it. So it puts the canister in this return module, which then blasts off and heads back to Earth. So it was supposed to return to Earth, supposed to be back here with its samples of soil on in August 2014. And then the main core of the Phobos Grunt spacecraft would remain on Phobos and continue to do some other scientific experiments for the next year. I found it very interesting because, just the description of the mission was very interesting because, of course, so far as we know, that would be the very first time we had any soil or rocks or samples of any kind returned from Mars. Now, I know you're saying, well, now, wait a minute. I thought you said it was going to Phobos. Yes, and Phobos is a moon of Mars that orbits very closely, about 6,000 kilometers away from the surface of Mars. And scientists on both sides of the pond are of the opinion that Phobos is probably littered with a lot of rocks and soil blasted away from Mars by asteroid impacts. So it would be quite possible then, if that theory is true, it would be possible for Phobos Grunt to scoop up some soil that is from Mars and some rocks from Mars, put them in this canister and return them to Earth. But it's also going to be, if this mission turns out to be successful, it's also going to be carrying a canister back from Phobos. A canister that's on board the spacecraft now. Now, this little canister, I did actually a show about this, and back when they were first planning this mission, and I showed you pictures of it, and we talked about it. It's a little canister about the size and shape of a hockey puck. And so what's in it? Well, some microorganisms from Earth. Three of them are archaea. You've heard me talk about these organisms. They are anaerobic archaea, which means they not only do they not require oxygen, they're allergic to it. It will kill them. And then there is another microorganism that I cannot remember the name of. And they are each in a separate vial inside this little canister. And this is the part where you kind of scratch your head and you think, why? Why would you want to send organisms there and then bring them back? Well, they want to see what happens to these organisms once they leave the Earth's magnetosphere. They want to see what the radiation of space does to these organisms. And so that was that's the plan. So there'll be soil and rock and this little canister with these biological entities, if you will, these little microorganisms. And it's supposed to be back here on August 2014. Well, let's talk about Phobos, and let's talk about this mission for just a moment, because Phobos is a really strange object. Some people think that Phobos may be, in fact, an artificial satellite. It might be. To me, though, I mean, when you look at the pictures of this thing, it doesn't look artificial. Maybe it has been modified. Scientists know that it does have a lot of open space on its interior. And they're ostensibly interested in trying to find out if perhaps it has water inside. But, and I find that to be a bit curious. But, you know, it looks like a big chunk of rock. That's about 27 kilometers diameter. It's not very big, and it goes around Mars. I think it's once every, 7 days, something like that, or maybe it's every 7 hours. I don't know, but it goes around Mars, pretty close to Mars, 6,000 kilometers from the surface. All right. The idea is to land the satellite, Phobos Grunt, on this chunk of rock orbiting Mars that often is described as being potato-shaped. Okay, well, I guess I can kind of see that. If we take a look at a still photograph of this potato shape, you know, we can see that it's got some strange features. Some people have said it looks sort of like the Death Star from Star Wars because of that big bowl-shaped crater on one side of it. It's a big crater. And you can see the coloration of it is something similar to Mars, so there is speculation that it may be actually a chunk of Mars originally. But it's interesting that this big 27, well, it's a small moon, but it's a big rock, 27 kilometers. That's a big rock. They say that it has great cavities in it, open spaces in it. Also, there is a theory, and this is something that the Russian scientists were looking at. There is a theory that Phobos may in fact be an asteroid that got captured into orbit around Mars. And so they're looking at it from that perspective as well. But it's got some strange features on it. And one of the strange features that's on Phobos is a monolith. Now, I guess by this time, just about every one of you has seen on YouTube the video of Buzz Aldrin speaking on national news and saying, let's go to Mars. Let's go to the moon of Mars, Phobos. It's got a monolith on it. Well, that, those who are watching on our TV channel, there it is. That's the monolith on Phobos right there. That's what Buzz Aldrin was talking about. Now, in this photograph, we're looking straight down on the top of it, so you really can't tell much about it. But from the shadow that it's casting, we can see it must be pretty tall. Basically rectangular, pretty tall. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and when we come back from this break, we will continue another Mars mishap.
You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about this latest Mars mishap. And folks, this story gets deeper. This story gets really curious here, almost to the point of suspicious. But it really does get curious here. We're talking about this Russian mission to Mars. It's on right now. And it's the Russians and the Chinese primarily. The Chinese have a satellite that's riding piggyback on a Russian spaceship on its way to Mars, or it was supposed to be on its way to Mars. It is not. It is in low Earth orbit. It was launched on Tuesday. It's in low Earth orbit. And when it separated from the rocket that took it up there, the telemetry went silent. And as a matter of fact, planetary scientist Pascal Lee with the Mars Institute had this comment. He said, no telemetry since separation. This is not good. Vladimir Popovkin told, he is the head of the Russian Space Agency, and he told the Russian news agency RIA Novosti, that he said, you know, we had a difficult night. We could not locate the spacecraft for a very long time, and now we know its coordinates. So they know where it is physically. What they don't know is why it won't talk to them. That's a mystery. And, of course, if it won't talk to them, it's quite possible it's not listening to them as well. And if that's the case, their task of trying to upload some new commands so that it could possibly recover and continue its mission, the possibility that it can't hear that and won't respond to that is pretty high. And they only had 36 hours. The time has been ticking, but they only had 36 hours from the time they lost the telemetry in order to recover this and to get it functioning again. Now, maybe they can. I'll tell you, Russian space scientists and engineers, they're nobody's joke. These people are smart. They really know their stuff. But there is a mystery about all of this. Now, let's take a moment and discuss this spacecraft itself. It's kind of a strange-looking spacecraft, and those who are watching our TV station are seeing it. And what I wanted to point out in the photograph is that it's, you can see on the left, that's what it looks like assembled. On the right, on that photograph, it's all expanded, so the parts have been taken off, okay? So you can see the right, if you look in the left side, right in the midsection, kind of where its belly would be, that's the Chinese satellite that's hitching a ride. And just above that, there's a bright blue kind of a ball with a spike on it. That is part of the device that lands. I'm pointing that out because it's part of the lander that lands on Phobos. And sitting right on top of that, right above that blue ball, that is the return capsule. That's what would take off and fly back to Earth and bring those samples back to Earth. And for the very, very first time, as far as we know, there would be samples of soil and rocks that very possibly could be from Mars. And people could look at them up close and personal. They could put them under microscopes and do all kinds of scientific examination, tests, and research of those samples. And we would know a great deal more about Mars than we know today. At least I think we would. Maybe not, but I think we would. Well, this satellite going to Phobos, this lander and satellite. The satellite on board is going to Mars. That's the Chinese satellite. And it's just going to do a lot of photography and communication back to its controllers in China. The lander will land on Phobos. It's not the first time the Russians have tried to go to Phobos. They seem to have, for whatever reason, a fixation on Phobos. For some reason, they want to get to Phobos. In 1988, the Russians launched Phobos 1, a satellite that was designed to go to Mars, do some infrared and optical scans of Mars. In other words, photography, and also of Phobos. Interestingly, that mission had the same problem as the current mission that we're talking about. On its way to Mars, it just vanished. They lost telemetry, and it just vanished. They don't know what happened to it. In 1989, Phobos 2 went to Mars, and it actually made it all the way to Mars. Phobos 2 entered orbit around Mars and began taking photographs. It began taking both infrared and optical photographs, and it was sending these via telemetry back to Earth. And there were some just amazing things that were contained in those photographs. Now, 1989, the technology was not quite where it is today, not by a long shot. So these photographs are not of the same higher quality that we're accustomed to seeing today, which, by the way, are not the highest quality. The highest quality are reserved for NASA and for the, I guess, the upper levels of the Russian Space Agency and so forth. But we get to see photographs that are much higher quality than were possible in 1989. Nevertheless, those photographs showed some very interesting structures down on the surface of Mars. Well, they showed something else. They showed a very large elliptical shadow moving across the surface of Mars. So whatever, and it was not the shadow of Phobos 2. The shadow of Phobos 2 is a sort of pretty much round, compact shape. This was a long elliptical shadow, and it was moving across the surface of Mars, meaning that whatever it was out further than Phobos 2. Otherwise, if it had been close in, Phobos 2 would not have picked up the shadow, but the object. Its cameras would have photographed the object. So somewhere between Phobos 2 and the moon Phobos, there was this large elliptical object moving and its shadow being cast down on the surface of Mars, and Phobos 2 photographed it. Several photographs. And it caused quite a stir in the scientific community, and particularly among Russian scientists, because, of course, these were their photographs. So Phobos 2 turned its attention to the moon Phobos. It turned its cameras that direction, and it began to take some photographs of Phobos. But when it did, it died. Those who are watching our TV channel are looking at a photograph of from Phobos 2, and this is the last photograph from Phobos 2 that has been released. It shows us the moon of Phobos, moon of Mars. And then there is this long, cigar-shaped object. Now, there are people who have said that that is approximately 25 kilometers in length, that cigar shape. Now, this is not photoshopped, people. This is the last photograph Phobos 2 sent back to Earth. Well, actually, I think there was one or two more photographs that came down, just partial photographs, because what happened, it snaps this picture and begins to send it down, and that's it. It got hit something struck Phobos 2. And they lost telemetry. They regained some telemetry moments later, but because of the Doppler effect in it, they could tell that this satellite, and it was gibberish, but this satellite was spinning out of control. What is that long cigar-shaped object that Phobos 2 photographed? Keep in mind that the White House has released a statement in response to a petition stating that the U.S. government has no evidence of life off this planet, outside of this planet. Keep in mind that they said there is no credible evidence of extraterrestrial intelligent life having ever engaged or made contact with any humans. That's the official statement out of the White House. We talked about it yesterday. We have no credible evidence. We have no evidence, actually, they said. We have no evidence of the existence of any extraterrestrial presence. Okay, well, the Russians have it. Whatever that thing is out there next to the moon of Mars by the name of Phobos, whatever that thing is, it's very, very long. It is not supposed to be there. It is not there today. Okay, so this is not something that's in orbit and just stays in orbit around Mars like the moons of Mars do. It's not that at all. It's something that, according to Russian scientists, should not be there. And it's the last thing Phobos 2 saw before it was decommissioned. Wasn't decommissioned by the Russians. It was decommissioned by that thing out there next to the moon of Mars called Phobos. All right, so we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking about this latest Mars mission, this latest Mars mishap. It's going on right now as I speak to you, ladies and gentlemen. It's happening now. Okay? This drama is playing out right now. And that is the Russian mission called Phobos Grunt. And it's dead in space. Now, remember, if they can't get it to fire up and head on over to Mars, then about a month from now, it's going to fall back to Earth, and it's loaded with very, very toxic, dangerous fuel. And it has a canister of microbes. Who knows whether those are dangerous or not? Nobody's talking about that. So, you know, this is a serious thing. Now, when we went away for break, I was talking with you about Phobos 2 and the picture that it shot of what shot it. It took this picture, sent it back to Earth as it was being shot, as it was being hit. And then it disappeared. It just spun out of control. Telemetry was such that they could tell it was spinning. And the telemetry was pretty much gibberish. They did get, I think, one more, maybe two pictures, partial pictures maybe, that they have not released. But this is the last one that they released, and this is the last thing Phobos 2 saw. Whatever that is, approximately 25 kilometers in length, whatever that is does not belong there. Well, now we've got Phobos Grunt. Blasted off, lifted off, no problem. Everything went as it was supposed to. The liftoff was perfect. It went right up into space where it was supposed to go. It was inserted in its low Earth orbit right where it was supposed to. It separated then from that rocket. And then it went blind, deaf, and dead. All right, now you might say, well, you know, don't the Russians sort of have a history of that? Well, the answer to that is yes and no. The answer is, well, let me just go ahead and show a chart, and I'll describe it for those of you who are listening. Russia, this chart shows how many times they've attempted to go to Venus and Mars and how many times they've succeeded. Russia has sent spaceships to Venus 28 times. Or they've attempted 28 missions to Venus. They've been successful with 16 of those, including landing on Venus and taking photographs from the surface, taking photographs as they were descending to the surface, taking photographs once they were on the surface. So they've tried 28 times and succeeded 16 times. That's better than 50%. 50% would be 14. So that's better than 50%. When it comes to Venus, they don't seem to have a whole lot of trouble getting there. Their record for successfully getting to Venus is right in there, about the same percentage as the U.S. The percentages are about the same. Now, Mars, they've tried 21 times and have succeeded 5. Think about this now. I told you this gets curious, doesn't it? If you leave Earth and you go one way, that takes you to Venus. You leave Earth and go the other way, that takes you to Mars. There's no real substantial difference in going to Venus or going to Mars. Now, once you get there, there's a difference. The size of the planets are quite different, and therefore the gravitational field is different. You have to calculate a different kind of orbit and speed and so forth. If you're going to land on Mars, there's not crushing pressure, and on Venus there is. The temperatures on Mars are pretty cold, generally speaking. Temperatures on Venus are pretty hot, really hot, generally speaking. Once you get there, there are differences. But just to leave Earth and go, the process is pretty much the same. So here they've got 28 attempts at Venus with 16 successes, including landings, several landings on the surface. 28 attempts, 16 successes. But in going to Mars, 21 attempts, including this one that's going on right now, and only 5 successes. When the process is essentially the same. The process of going to Mars and the process of going to Venus are essentially the same. Yeah, there are a few differences. Calculations have to be different. So, but technologically, It's pretty much the same process. Why is it that they can go to Venus with a better than 50% success rate, but they can't seem to get to Mars? Doesn't that make you raise at least one eyebrow? Doesn't that make you say, what's up with this? Doesn't that make you say, that's kind of suspicious, or at least curious? I mean, look, let's say that you get in your car and you drive down the street. When you get to the stop sign, you can go right or left. Now, let's say that 90% of the time, if you turn left, you do it successfully. But if you turn right, you have a crash 90% of the time. Wouldn't that be kind of odd? I mean, that's sort of what we're looking at here. I mean, this is weird. This is really strange. You compare the Russian attempts and successes for Venus with the attempts and successes for Mars, and you got to stand back and kind of say, wow, what's up with this? It seems pretty clear someone doesn't want them to go to Mars. Now, maybe the someone who doesn't want them to go to Mars flies a very large cigar-shaped craft and is hanging out at Mars and says, you know, I don't like Russians. I don't want Russians over here. Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there's something going on Phobos that someone, perhaps on Phobos, doesn't want the Russians to see. They don't want anybody to see. They want to be left alone, maybe. Now, if that's the case, that would explain a lot of their difficulty, because Russia seems to have a fixation on Phobos. Why? I don't know, but the cosmos keeps slapping their hand and telling them no. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for the first hour, because in that first hour, I have delivered a boatload of information about a grand mystery taking place right now as I speak to you. A grand mystery taking place in space, with a Russian mission called Phobos Grunt carrying piggyback a satellite from China destined, they hoped, for Mars. But it's silent. It's dead. It made orbit, and then it died. They're trying to recover it right now. They're trying to reestablish communications with it. Frankly, I hope they do. I hope they're able to recover this and get it on its way to Mars and complete this mission, because I think it would be absolutely fabulous for some soil samples, rock samples, etc., to come back from Phobos to Earth so that they can be examined by scientists here on Earth. I think it would be outstanding. You know, I'm not much into conspiracy theories, but I do think in terms of movie plots, and I can think when, you know, I see something like this, I can see a movie plot here. And wouldn't it be a great movie plot that some shadow government, maybe it's made up of people from many countries, but some shadowy group that is using technology to thwart Russian attempts to go to Phobos, because they know that they will discover life there. Now, that's just a fictional movie plot. But wouldn't that be cool? All of this may be coincidence. But it looks to me like if you go to the end of the street and turn left and you do okay most of the time, if you go to the end of the street and you turn right, you crash most of the time. Something's fishy down there at the end of the street. When you leave Earth and you head to Venus and you get there and you can even land there most of the time, you leave Earth and you go the other direction to Mars, and most of the time you crash and burn. Most of the time you have malfunctions or actually crash, that's happened, or explosions. Something's fishy. I don't think it's just coincidence. Now, I'm not suggesting that I think there are some nefarious earthlings that are causing this to happen. I mean, that's a fictional movie plot that I suggested. But something's up. Something's fishy. I would be interested in knowing what you think the fish are comprised of. Something's not right about all of this. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And the telephone lines are open. We will go open line now, and we can talk about other things if you wish to. But I do want to know what you think about these very odd, shall we say, coincidences that have caused the Russians to be able to do 28 attempts at Venus and succeed more than 50% of the time, and yet 21 attempts at Mars and succeed only 5 times. That doesn't make sense to me. That makes no sense to me at all. If you can go to Venus, then you've got what it takes to go to Mars. Why are we looking at these numbers? Why are we seeing these numbers? Now, there are other things for us to discuss relative to this mission as well. I'd like to know this thing, this idea about having a canister of microbes on board and going to some other place in our solar system with microbes from Earth. Do you think that's smart? Do you think that's what we ought to be doing? And if this if this spacecraft cannot be recovered, it is going to crash about a month from now. And it is carrying a full load of fuel. And it's got a lot of fuel. Those who are watching our TV channel, there is a donut-shaped ring, a donut-shaped tube at the bottom of this spacecraft. That's the fuel tank. And it is full. It's full of fuel. And that fuel is extremely toxic. Well, if this spacecraft comes crashing back down to Earth, that's either going to explode and vaporize in our atmosphere, or if it does not do that, because there's no heat shield on it, but if it does not do that, then what we're looking at is a spacecraft with all that fuel impacting the earth at some place. Maybe the ocean. But do we need all that toxicity in the air? Do we need all that toxicity in the ocean? If they can't get this recovered, it's coming. It's coming. Now, you might remember the U.S. had a satellite that was going to crash back to Earth, and it had a lot of fuel on it. It was a satellite that things didn't go real well, and it didn't do what it was supposed to do, and it had a pretty much full load of fuel. And this happened during the George W. Bush administration, and the decision was made to shoot it down and destroy it in space before it entered our atmosphere so that the fuel would not be a threat to human life. What do you think? What is it that's causing these Russian trips to Mars to be hexed? Are they hexed? What's causing them to not be able to complete their missions? Is there someone on Phobos that's causing this? Is there someone on Mars that's causing it? Or is it being caused on Earth? Or do you think it's just coincidence that somehow they build better spacecraft to go to Venus than they build for going to Mars? I mean, what's the deal here? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming, and just so you know, you're slightly breaking up on the phone.
Okay, go ahead. The phone is not an issue.
What is America's record for Mars and Venus?
Slightly more than 50%.
What?
Slightly more than 50%.
Okay. This is just speculation. It's a little different than yours, but what is the possibility that there may be a base, an active base, on or in Phobos, so that would essentially turn that into a space station, an orbiting space station, and they don't mind anyone going to Mars' surface because there's nothing on the surface, but they really have a problem with us going to Phobos.
You know, the evidence is circumstantial, but it looks like something like that must be the case. I'm not saying it is the case, but something like that must be the case, especially when you take into account the Phobos 2 satellite and the picture it sent back.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, there's this long cigar-shaped object out there. It's the last thing that we know of that Phobos 2 saw before it was killed. And where is this long cigar shape? Right up next to Phobos, the moon of Mars. So
I'm now just a second. When I'm looking at that picture, I think it could be a possibility that it was just pulling away from docking with their space station in or on Phobos.
Well, yeah, you know, I've actually read comments on various blogs and forums where people are speculating that that was the case. And, you know, if Phobos 2 turned that direction and hit it with radar or infrared, that ship may have interpreted that as a hostile act. So
I'm getting probably every fifth word, Kevin, so I'm just agreeing with you, so.
Okay. Well, there's nothing I can do about that. We're hearing you just fine, and I don't know what to tell you. The phones are working.
I'm just putting it out there just so you know something's screwy with the phone line right now.
Okay. All right, Brent. Thanks for the call, buddy.
Yep. Get back.
Bye. Yeah, well, you know, all I can tell you, folks, is we're lucky to even be on the air on the TV side. And but the telephones ought to be working just fine. In fact, they are working just fine, as you could hear. All right, what do you think about it? Now, come on. Come on. Don't be a Phobos. Don't be a couch Phobos. You know, it's a potato-shaped moon. Don't be a couch Phobos. You have some kind of speculation, opinion, or thought about what's going on with these Russian spacecraft when they leave Earth and go to Mars. I've shown you the chart about going to Venus as compared with going to Mars. You don't think something's up? You don't think that's strange? And, you know, you may be kind of scratching your head and saying, yeah, well, I think it might be a little strange, but so what? So what is if that thing comes down and it happens to come down over your city? There's a lot of poison in it. That's so what? I think we sort of need to figure out why they can't get to Mars, don't you? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, we understand that. Go ahead, okay? Jerome. We understand that. Go ahead.
Okay. One of my questions is, the thing that shot down Phobos 2, it looks to me like it might be an energy beam. Is it confirmed to be a solid thing, or could it be some sort of energy beam?
Well, if you take that picture and you zoom in on it, you will see it has a shape. The picture that's on your screen, look at the top and compare it to the bottom. It narrows at the top. But if you zoom in on that, it narrows like the front of a car has a windshield that comes down toward the hood, and then the car is narrower at the front than it is at the back because you're just looking at the hood. But, you know, there's a cockpit section as well. Well, it has that shape. It has that shape as if it comes down like a cockpit windshield. I don't think a beam would have that.
Kevin, excuse me for breaking in. I really can't hear you at all. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to end the conversation on my part. It's breaking up that it's unintelligible.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, apparently, folks, there's some kind of weirdness because of us using this different computer tonight. So when you call, you don't need to tell me that you can't hear me. We already know that. Just say what you want to say, and then we'll comment on air, okay? We already know, okay, so you don't need to inform us of that. Just say what you want to say, all right? And I do hope you will give us a call and let us know what you think about this. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the air. Your first name.
Oh, yeah. And... Kevin, this is Mike.
Okay, Mike.
From Kentucky.
Yep.
As I look at that photo you got posted about the last photo from Phobos, you know, that reminds me of the object that Dr. Norman, what's his name?
Berger.
Posted in his rings of Saturn Ringmaker.
Yeah.
And we're talking about objects that are planet size and longer, some of the larger ones, but that's what that long cylindrical object looks like. And it may be possible that they are being based, some of them there on Phobos.
So who do you think they are? Is that the Anunnaki, or who are they?
Yeah, but as far as what's happening to the Russians, you know, it seems just like doesn't matter who's launching what here lately. There's a lot of technical problems, and I'm wondering if there's some EMPs, electromagnetic pulses, being shot off by somebody.
Well, there might be. Can you hear me any better now?
No. Not a whole lot.
All right.
You're like Brent said, you're breaking up. You're, you know.
Okay.
But I'm picking up what you're saying, but it's just broken phrases.
Okay. Mike, thanks for the call. Well, you know, I don't know if, I don't know what these craft would use for a weapon. But it certainly is not beyond the pale to think that they might be using some kind of pulse weapon that hit the Phobos 2 and spun it out of control. You know, if you get hit by a pulse of wind, if that pulse of wind is moving rapidly enough and dense enough, it'll tear you up. It's not just wind. I mean, it is, but it literally would rip you apart. It would explode you. And you can do the same thing with electronic pulses. You can do the same thing with, I would think, with photon pulses. All you have to do is wrap it up in a pretty dense package. Pack it in pretty dense and then pulse it toward your target. And it's when it hits that target, it's going to have destructive force. Does it seem odd to you, though, that the Russians can leave Earth and head toward Venus and have a better than 50% expectation that it's going to be successful? Not so when they leave Earth and head towards Mars. Venus is on one side of Earth, Mars is on the other. Venus and Mars. Okay, so they head toward Venus, and they can expect they're probably going to make it. They head towards Mars, and they can expect they probably are not. And it's essentially the same technology. It's the same rockets. What's going on with that? Is there... you know, I think there is a connection between their focus on Phobos and their inability to get there. But I don't know what that connection means. I have no idea why anybody would be upset about the Russians, the Chinese, us, the European Space Agency, or anybody else going to Phobos. But, I mean, maybe it is all just coincidence. But it just, the numbers don't stack up right for it to look like a coincidence to me. I'm not sure what they mean, other than it does seem to indicate somebody may not want the Russians going to Phobos. Buzz Aldrin... it was pretty excited about, and he said on television, in a way that communicated that he was pretty excited about it, about this monolith that's on Phobos. Now, that was not new information when he said that. But for most of the world of mushrooms, it was an oh wow moment. For most of the world of mushrooms, it was, oh my God. Although those of us who day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year are involved in trying to get information and get to the bottom of what's going on out there, that was not new news to us. But if there is this monolith, which there is, who put it there? And, you know, we can see by its shadow that it's built like a rectangular kind of a skyscraper thing. I don't know how tall it is, but the point is, it's not just a rock on the surface. There's nothing else around it that geologically would suggest that this is a geological feature. Take a look at that. There are no other monolithic structures around it. There are no cliffs or mountains or upthrusts in the soil that would suggest that this is a natural geological structure. When you look at it and think about what you're seeing, you are seeing a structure that is basically rectangular. The way it's oriented in the picture here, some people might say, well, it looks like a diamond shape to me. Well, yeah, if you look from one corner across to the other corner, like this picture is oriented. But move yourself around sort of mentally so that you're standing in that shadow and look at it. Well, now it's a rectangle, right? So there's nothing else around it that would suggest even remotely that this could be a geological, natural geological formation. Now, since I'm not standing there with, you know, a pick and a sample bag and a camera, there's no way I can say for sure that this is not natural. But there's nothing around it that suggests that it is natural. It's pretty much just smooth ground around it, except, you know, right at its base, right there at its base, there are some little structures. And when I say structure, I don't know what those are. Could be boulders. I don't know. But it sure looks artificial. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we shall return right after this. Sorry for the prolonged break. I was trying to see if I could get some of this worked out with the telephones. I don't know if I did or not. But anyway, moving ahead. Something is odd. Really, really odd about the fact that Russia seems to have no more problem than any other space-faring nation in going to Venus. But they just can't seem to get to Mars. 21 attempts, only 5 succeeded. Going to Venus, 28 attempts, and 16 succeeded. Rather spectacularly, too. Not only went to Venus, but landed on the surface of Venus. Something is really odd that they can do that and can't seem to get to Mars. There is, of course, always the possibility that there's someone, I mean, it's all speculation here, but there's always a possibility that there's someone or some group inside of their space agency and industry that doesn't want them to go to Mars for some reason. And it's possibly sabotaging Mars missions. That's always a possibility. I don't think it's very likely. But, I mean, we just don't know. And when you don't have all the data, all speculation is valid. Everything's open for speculation when in the absence of data. So we just don't know. But the numbers don't lie, do they? The numbers show that they do have the technical knowledge, they have the technical ability to build rockets that can fly successfully in space. The numbers show that. The numbers show that they can leave here and go to Venus with about the same success rate that all other spacefaring nations have. But then, when they try to go to Mars, same technology, probably even the same companies building the rockets, same everything, they leave Earth, headed for Mars, and they can't, in this case, can't even get out of low Earth orbit. Something is excessively strange about that. We have a flash message from one of our listeners in the UK. This is from Ross. And he says, "Hi, Kevin. I agree this malfunction reeks of fish." I like your choice of words there. Yeah, it does. What a great way for the New World Order to introduce a disease epidemic. Launch a space probe with microbes for an experiment. It seemingly has a malfunction and falls back to Earth and distributes the disease throughout the atmosphere. Even the best script writers couldn't make this up. Great show as always. Cheers, Ross. Well, Ross, thank you for the flash message. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us there, and I invite others to do that. If you're not in the USA, if you're not in Canada, you can send me a flash message, or you can call us. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. But if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, you can send a flash message, and you do that by going to my website. Scroll down, you'll see a picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you'll see the link that says flash message, and then you can do what Ross did, send me a flash message. But if you're in the USA, if you're in Canada, use the telephone line, give me a call. This is not just a ho-hum deal here. I mean, really, folks, this is serious. This is not just, so what? So the Russians can't get to Mars. This is serious. The fact that they can't get to Mars means that thing is going to fall, and the fact that it's going to fall back to Earth means that it's bringing with it all of its fuel, it's bringing with it those microbes, and who knows what else might be on it. It's coming. If they can't get it fired up and headed to Mars, it's coming, and it's going to be coming back in about a month. Now, Ross makes a good point. I kind of think about these things and come up with movie plots. And, boy, that would be a good movie. You know, I think about it like that. That would be a good movie. But it is, it's interesting. You know, Ross says even, the best screenwriters couldn't come up with this. And I agree. I agree this is way beyond just being curious. This is serious. This is very serious. And, it's better for your health, my health, and the health of this planet that they get this thing fired up and headed to Mars. Now, right now, it's dead. Right now, they know where it is. They know its coordinates, but they have no telemetry connection with it. They're working on that. They're trying to reestablish telemetry communications with this spaceship. And then if they are able to do that, they can perhaps reorient it and get it headed over to Mars. Now, the interesting thing about the schedule here, if they can't do that, it's going to be a month and the thing falls. They only have 2 weeks in which to get it fired up and headed to Mars in terms of its position. But they only had 36 hours to do it in terms of what? In terms of its battery power. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is John from Arizona.
Hello, John from Arizona.
Well, I don't know if this was brought up earlier. I was with a client earlier in the evening and missed part of the show, but you know that if this is coming back and it was a plan, you know, somebody's mischievous or evil plan, that they have to live in this world too, and there's an antidote to whatever's coming back already existing for those in the know.
Yeah, or they, I mean, if it, John, personally, it's a far stretch for me to think that this is something that's part of a dark and nefarious plan.
Having tropes.
And, but let me say this. If it is, then those who have planned it would know where it's coming back, and I think they could just make arrangements not to be in that part of the world at that time. They could just make arrangements to be elsewhere.
I'm still having...
Okay, we understand. John, thank you for the call. If you didn't hear the first part of the show, then you didn't hear the announcement about the technology and the situation here tonight. All right. But thank you for the call. And that's true. They have to live on this planet, too. But always remember this. The so-called elite, you know, the ones that are alleged to be orchestrating all of this evil, according to the allegations, they have their own safe houses, if you will. They have their own tunnels to get into. They've got their own food supply and so forth. So they might not be too worried about this coming back. This is serious, though, folks. This is not a joke. This is not a ho-hum, so what? This is serious. This spaceship needs to be fired up. This spaceship needs to get underway and on its way to Mars. You need that to happen for your health. I need it to happen. The Earth needs that to happen. What's going to happen at this moment is a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're on final approach. We only have a few minutes left, and we're talking about Phobos Grunt mission and all of Russia's missions to Mars. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Tony from Denver.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Kevin, yeah, yes, this is sabotaged by the alien prison guards that keep us here on this prison planet. We can't go to the moon, and no one can explore space. And Kevin, I wanted to change the subject for a second and ask you a question.
Okay.
What is your opinion of today's test by Obama of the national emergency system? I think he is conditioning us for an alien invasion, and Obama will use this emergency system to take over everyone's TV and all the radio shows to carry out a false flag alien invasion. I see no other reason why individual states can't do this on their own, and I'm against this sort of iron-fisted control coming out of Washington.
Okay, you will have problems listening to me on the phone, but you may try if you wish, and let me answer that. This is one of those that I would have to say is a necessary evil. Years ago, legislation was passed and FCC regulations were promulgated for states to set up a common emergency frequency that all emergency services could switch to in the event of a big emergency in their state. Most of the states have not done it. When I was still a deputy sheriff, we would have... they called them civil defense drills when I first started, and then they changed the name. It went through several different names. But the reason for the drills is to see how well things worked and where were the weaknesses. The weaknesses were that the ambulances could not talk to the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office could not talk to the city police. The city police and the sheriff couldn't talk to the firefighters, and so forth, because nobody had these common radios with this common channel. And it's very expensive to install that channel in every radio of every police officer, deputy sheriff, ambulance, firefighter, etc. in the state. And so a lot of states didn't do it. And there has to be some way for everyone to be able to talk and communicate when you're working a huge emergency. And I have worked some pretty big emergencies, and communications is a really, really sticky problem. And in a real emergency, a really serious emergency, it's minutes don't matter, seconds matter. And so I don't see, I mean, the test that happened today is of a system that could be used, as you describe, it could be used for evil. At the same time, I don't see it as necessarily being a threat or being evil. I've been in situations where we needed that common channel and we didn't have it. So now they've got it and now they've tested it. And I see that as being mostly, I think, a very positive thing. So I don't know how much of that you heard, but because we do have some tech issues with the phone tonight. But does that answer your question?
Yes, but specifically, Kevin, what about the false flag alien invasion? Do you think that is intended in the future for us using this emergency system?
Well, I don't know. Let me say it this way. If there is a false flag alien invasion, if that happens, then yes, they will use this system that way. They sure will.
So you would agree that maybe this would be dangerous in that sort of situation?
Yes, it could be dangerous. If you have evil people at the top that are pulling false flags, if that's the case, then everything that we've set up for purposes of good can be misused for the false flag and be misused and redirected into something that's not good, that is evil. Everything we have can be used that way. But let me say this. By itself, the capability of having communications so that everyone can be communicated with, I think that's a good thing as long as it doesn't get misdirected into some type of situation like what you've described.
Well, Kevin, great show tonight, and thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we will try to get this telephone thing worked out. But like I said, when the Rolls-Royce computer, and that's not a brand name, but it's the pride of the fleet, when it went down last night, I worked with it all night. I worked with it today. I couldn't get things working again. So we're having to use a laptop to broadcast with here tonight. Three computers are involved in every broadcast. The Hoss, the big one, is what went down. And a laptop is sitting in playing its part tonight. So we're lucky to even be on the air tonight, but we'll see if we can't get the phones fixed by tomorrow night, get that problem worked out, get it ironed out. But yeah, look, the ability to communicate is vital, and seconds matter when there's a big emergency. Huge earthquake, and people trapped and needing rescue, and people hurt and needing help, big tsunami. I mean, you can just go down the list. Well, if that happens, there needs to be that common channel, and it has to be tested to make sure it works. But there has to be that, you know, where people in charge of getting help to people can flip the switch and seize control of communications so that everyone can be communicated with simultaneously and efforts can be directed. I don't see that as being particularly an evil thing, but it certainly could be used that way. It's the same with nuclear energy. I don't see nuclear energy as being particularly evil, but it certainly can be used for death and destruction, can't it? And it can be misused so that they cut corners here and there, and then it becomes dangerous, even if it's not in a bomb, becomes dangerous to life. And but it's the concept itself is not an evil concept. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this evening, and I'm glad you were here. I'm glad I was here. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.